show, man. Your Jordans are fucked up.
Welcome to Post Weird, a conversation.
Steve's magic fingers. Okay, I'm ready. On, you're ready. You're right there with me.
Welcome to another episode of Post Weird, a conversation show about pop culture and the apocalypse. Today, we're talking almost exclusively about TV. There's so many good shows either on right now or coming up. So we're going to try to just outline this buffet of stuff for you to watch on streamers. But first, as always, I'm here with Steve. Steve, how you doing?
I'm in a super silly mood, man.
telling me.
I feel like we should all have a nice time. It's a nice Sunday. I have a glass of wine here.
I see that. I wasn't invited. I got water.
I've been having like fun carbs and alcohol on the weekend. So I'm like, I forgot it's nice to enjoy things in moderation. It's lovely to drink every day.
Yeah. Mm. So people tell me.
My point is, I'm in a good, super silly mood. I have a weird question for you. I wanted to share some.
Please start off this pod hot. This is podcast.
It's not particularly aimed at you, and I don't want to like out any person that we know who asked me a really personal question. But I want to be like, I don't think I'm sexually prudish. You know, I think I'm like, I'm adventurous. I'm like, I'm informed. I'm like, oh, I think things are changing in the world, so I'm like part of it. But like, my wife said to me, hey, what happens if I want to peg you? What do we do? And I promise you, like, it's not even a thought in my head of like, is this something I need to come to be comfortable with? It's just like, no. You know, it's just like a strong nothing. It doesn't even resonate in my brain of like, oh, what does it say? Am I curious? No, it's just no.
I don't know how I'm supposed to respond to this. I agree. I see you as a sex positive individual. And I feel like, you know, it's okay, even within the parameters of being sex positive, to know what you do and don't like.
Yeah.
Right?
What are you doing, though, is my question.
Everything within a sex positive relationship should be consensual, right? So I feel like there's no pressure.
What are you doing?
Not
that.
That's
what I'm saying, right? But like, I know.
You know, like I said, as a sex positive person, I feel like that doesn't mean that there's no guardrails. There's no lines. I think you learn with people what your lines are.
My lines are all toxic masculinity, and I know that that's the worst part of me. Like, especially as a black man, we have like really strong, like, things have to be a certain way to exist, and it's hard for me to like see past it. So in my head, I'm like, why would I let you put a penis inside me? It's how my brain immediately takes it. Like, why would I ever allow it? Why would I allow that? Why would I be comfortable to let my butt go? To let my butt, Steven's butt, just drift off into the wind. You see what I'm saying? But I'm like, I'm sexually positive. I'm like, I'm down. I'm explorative. But
I mean, Maybe someone will try to cancel me.
You get it
for
all,
this. but I honestly just don't see that as being a part of the toxic masculinity conversation. Toxic masculinity has to do with sort of like preconceived notions of your manliness and place in the world based only on your gender, I guess, or reinforced ideas of your gender. I don't know that it necessarily has as much to do with your sexual boundaries.
Oh man, hold the phone here. I have some fun times for you. You see, because I am like, I'm Guyanese, so I'm like West Indian, I'm Caribbean adjacent, right? So I can tell you, I hear your sentence and I can intellectually understand your sentence, but I promise you. You know what? We're having an honest podcast. I've been told my whole life how certain things, I just didn't want to say the phrase because I'm like, this phrase is so dated. So like even saying it sounds very chuggy of me to say. I'm here today with all the words.
This is supposed to be a podcast.
No, just give me 4 more minutes. How long of it is? 5 minutes. Give me 4 more minutes. I promise you I'll be here. I've been told all my life that certain non-gay things are gay. Since I was like 5 years old to like 20-something. And in college, I matured, met people, explored life, and truly was able to come out of this prison that is like culture for me, you know? Like I've heard people say like Jamaican men don't eat pussy because eating pussy is gay. Like I want you to understand. So like sometimes sentences don't need to make sense for them to like have ramifications in people's lives. So I say sure. This to say,
yeah,
when someone is like, yeah, my having a heterosexual moment where my partner explores my prostate since it is my A spot, I get it. But in the core, like in the back part of my brain, I'm like, no.
Can I tell you, just speaking of background, I need to tell you, I don't remember telling you this story before, but in light of talking about conservative growing environments, right? So I went to school at a very conservative religious school in a very conservative religious area. And I once had a classmate. And if for some reason he would ever to hear it, I would hear this conversation. I would say, "What's up? You're probably still the dumbass." But I remember having like a conversation in our relationships class, which was what we took in place of sex ed. It was really not about sex, but I remember his explanation for why gay sex was wrong was that a square peg doesn't go in a round hole. Like basically that the butthole does not fit the penis. And that's why it's wrong. And I want to know, was his dick square? Like what possessed someone to be like, you know what? I just don't think it fits there. Cause buddy, I don't know what would bring someone to that conclusion.
Hey buddy, I may not be a fan of it, but I promise you, fingers do go in noses pretty easy, buddy.
That's I'm just like the only explanation I can come up with for someone to think this is if they have a rare condition of square dick.
Oh,
like he legitimately is like
square dick.
What happens if I just look down there and it's a rectangle? I don't know what to do because that's the only reasonable explanation for being like, nah, I just don't think it.
If my dick is square, it's not going to vagina either though. So it's like, it's not going anywhere. It's barely going in your mouth. It's barely going in. Where am I putting it? Where are we putting this thing? I got nowhere to put this square itchy penis. I'm sorry. This pod is off the rails. I apologize.
Just, that's just one of the funniest moments of my entire schooling career. As just like everyone sort of laughed and giggled at this, the idea that the comparisons of you know, holes in genitalia was that they're not the right shape.
Can I tell you something? Like that for me, that is like the part of like the toxicness in culture around men where it's just like, yo, you niggas are stupid. Like I feel like nobody truly understands. Like men truly like run the world. And are like dumb. And I don't want to be one of those podcasts where people are like, we're just men hating or bashing. You know what I'm saying? Like the same questions I would have had with a group of men at 14 about something I had no business talking about, something I had no business even trying to learn about. I could still have that conversation now as a 31-year-old man. And now they're just so much more like, yeah, of course you can't put that square dick in that butt. That don't make sense. Ask yourselves, why?
There's definitely someone in a position of power who has a square dick or square dick thinking. Like they're just sort of like they're. I mean, maybe this dude from my high school. I don't know what he's doing right now, but like he could be out there in a leadership position, in a leadership role, just being like, you know what, private parts are definitely like those preschool toys where you try to fit the blocks into the cognitive different things.
Testing. Like, yes.
Yeah. He was definitely like, that's how sex works. It's just a one big cube and you got to try to fit whatever you can into it. And if it doesn't fit.
He's like, I put my penis in my wife's vagina and it latches on the moment I put it in. I hear it latch. I hear it latch.
I'm just imagining like the airlock noise from Star Wars. It's just like on entry.
And you know it's in, right? Yeah, it's in. It's in. That's how you know it's in.
It's in.
That's how you know it's in. It's fucking, I'm supposed to say, man, that's stupid. I'm sick of pretending we're not stupid.
Upon release, it's just like
I mean, if
that's
you release.
Like, that's like you know, I get going it. Up in release, Star Wars.
I'm not releasing. You pull out. That's crazy. Hilarious.
We gotta talk about TV, guys. But we can continue, I suppose, on the sexual tangent shortly, because we've got a good TV show that's airing right now that we're gonna talk about. But first, let's just like go over some of the great things that are coming to TV soon. I don't know how many of these we're gonna end up covering on this show, and of course this is tilted a little bit towards my interest since I made the list, but Steve, let me just read these off to you and get your sort of like instant reaction. Atlanta season garbage. 3.
That's hot take. What? I'm hot taking it today. We don't need 20 minutes of me telling you I have a secret take about Atlanta, but I don't want to bring it up.
I'm gonna Moon Knight.
Mid.
I know you haven't watched Barry. Or Russian Doll, but those are returning shows that were critically acclaimed on their release. Both of them are going to have seasons that begin airing in the next month. We've got a new Andrew Garfield crime show in the vein of True Detective called Under the Banner of Heaven. I know you're big Andrew Garfield guy. We're going to watch
AG,
this one,
baby. It's all AG. It's all Andrew Cuomo over here with Andrew Garfield. I'm riding him to the fucking wheels come off on Andrew Garfield. But I did look at this one. It looks fantastic. And he's also just as an actor really shining and no one is giving his accolades right now. And it's disgusting.
He's having a moment. He's having a moment.
I want to give him his praise, but whatever.
We've got two sort of like prestige crime shows from famous creators. We Own the City, which is coming from the creators of The Wire, which is about a corrupt Baltimore police department. Probably going to be one of the shows of the year. Tokyo Vice, whose pilot episode is going to be directed by Michael Mann of Heat fame. I'm really looking forward to this one, except for Ansel Elgort's in it. And he kind of sucks, but
yeah.
Then there's some other big ones dropping. The Halo show, Gaslit, The Offer, which is about the making of The Godfather. So like, what are you thinking when you see this list and see all of these shows starring pretty large people, pretty large creators? These are all coming out in the next
month. I'm interested in The Offer.
That seems insane.
I'm interested in The Offer just because I remember hearing about how it had a really rough production because of what's the main actor's name? He was Miles Teller.
Marlon Brando. Oh, you're not talking about the original Godfather. You're talking about the actor in the show.
Miles Teller was staunchly unvaxxed and it became a big fucking deal. And he then got a whole bunch of production sick because of his unvaxxedness. And it was part of a Rocky production. I would love to see if any of that is seen in just the light of the show, even though it probably won't be.
It should. It was actually going to star Armie Hammer too, I believe. So that's like a swing and a miss a couple times on trying to
two
make
to three
this
times.
Show.
We shot what we could.
An anti-vaxxer and a cannibal. So that sounds like the start of a joke. An anti-vaxxer and a cannibal walk into a bar,
and there's a priest left over.
But I just feel like this feels like a. I don't know if it's because. Shows were still finishing production from the COVID period. A lot of stuff is getting finished. They feel more comfortable with it coming out right now. I don't know. Like, what do you think is behind all of these shows beginning to air within a month of each other? It feels crazy. It's like when all the movie studios wait until November to drop all their movies or whatever. Like this just seems
there's an odd energy right now when it comes to sort of like delivering TV. I kind of imagine maybe it has something to do with the COVID restrictions just being lifted a bit. And they're like, oh, we got to get this out. Otherwise, no one's going to watch this. And they're just going to go see a bunch of movies that no one cares about, which would make sense. For me, the Halo show on this list is the worst show, and it looks the best. And I just don't think Halo needs to be a show.
This show took forever for them to make, too. This has been in development for years. It looks like they got a giant budget for it. I think Paramount Plus is really betting on it. But I also, like, video game adaptations just don't have a good track record. I don't know why anyone would necessarily be like, I'm not interested in the Halo games, but I want to watch the show.
Because before it used to be like, the movie is 2 hours, so the show, 6 episodes, makes more sense. You get more story. But like, if the video game ultimately is somewhere between 40 to 50 hours each game, and there's multiple games and multiple books and multiple forms of media, for you to give me a 6-hour show just feels like unnecessary. It just feels like contractually obligated creation, and I'm just not interested. Also, I don't think the Halo storyline is that fun if you're not playing it. I always find it a bit boring.
I never owned an Xbox.
I'm Xbox, so I have not played a lot of Halo games. Played from 3 until now, I've played Halo. This is a lot.
It's just interesting. I think this is part of a larger conversation, not necessarily covered on this list, but you have some of the streaming services betting huge on intellectual property. Like, you've got Amazon's bet that people want to see the Lord of the Rings show. You've got HBO's bet that people want to see Game of Thrones spinoff. And I think to a lesser extent, that's a different bet that like Paramount Plus is doing, is that like, we can throw a ton of money into this sci-fi show that has an identifiable name. I have no idea how that's going to work for them. Because I also don't even know how many people... I'd be interested in the raw subscriber numbers, but like I don't have Paramount
I think Plus. Both of these bets are just dated. I think the Game of Thrones sequel, I think the last season did enough damage to really slow down the IP. I think at the time when we were watching Game of Thrones before the last season, we were absolutely enthralled by just sort of like deep lore content. And so, like, yeah, let's start creating more deep lore content, so you're going to get Lord of the Rings. But I just don't think that's what people want. But I also am not the person who would want it. I just, as a person who watches a lot of TV, this doesn't seem like the kind of TV that the people who watch a lot of TV are clamoring for.
Well, I don't know if there's been any other show, piece of pop culture that was more damaged by its last season.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like Game of Thrones aired that last season and then just disappeared.
Just walked away.
Because no one wanted to talk about how it ended or talk about how we spent years and years invested in this thing that was so dissatisfying at its end. I feel like that has to be a real concern for the spinoffs. But I think one thing I want to mention is that we're talking about that comparison because of Halo as IP. But if you look down this list, there's a lot of I'm not going to say non-IP because, like, I know there's a few things that are based off books or whatever it is. So they are still based off real things, but they're not intellectual property in the comics, video games type adaptations that we're used to seeing. It seems like a big, you know, avalanche of basically prestige TV, things that networks would have put their entire year behind in promoting these. I mean, like, you have We Own This City, which is coming out from the creators of The Wire. This is like HBO's thing. Like, HBO makes gritty crime dramas that have some of the best actors alive in them. And they have a new one coming out, and it's going to go up against, you know, Tokyo Vice, which is on the same platform too. Like, Tokyo Vice is an HBO Max show. So, like, they're just dropping bombs over
there. I need a soundbite of you saying dropping bombs. I just need that every time, because I feel that too. It's just a weird time a little bit for me. It's like, I'm really happy to be home watching TV again. I'm enjoying what I'm watching. The shows that we're about to get into, I'm enjoying watching them in a way I haven't enjoyed watching TV. That was just, you know, the mindlessly sitcom trash that I watch sometimes. Which, by the way, please, NBC, can you just renew Grand Crew, please? Please? Please?
I saw that Abbott Elementary, another one of your favorites.
Yeah, that one got renewed. You deserve it. Nice. You now watching that is like crazy to me. You're rewatching old episodes of The Office but won't watch Abbott Elementary is nuts.
I'm no longer rewatching old episodes of The Office. We completed our
But won't watch one new show.
We wanted to. I don't.
But you could tell me.
I have a hard time with new sitcoms, but that's
it's written so well.
And I'm sure that it is, and maybe I'll get to it at some point. We've talked about the stakes that I'm looking for in TV, and a sitcom just doesn't match that energy right now.
But you're rewatching a whole episode of a sitcom with low stakes.
That's different because we talked about this because I can two screen something I've already seen before. I don't want to get back into this conversation, but if I've already seen it before, I feel comfortable two screening. If I haven't seen it before, I'm sitting there and devoting my entire attention to it, which is maybe not the stakes that need to be afforded to a sitcom.
I'll say this before we get, I'm not making it long. I can't imagine you're just like every single time I watch something, my dick needs to be rock hard. Is what you're saying to me. I need to
that,
be
that's rock what I'm that is 100% true.
I can't be flaccid X. Not semi flaccid.
That's exactly what I'm
rock
saying.
Rock hard.
I am fully engaged. I'm focused.
Like that is crazy to me. But you know what, to each their own. Enjoy your television.
I want to move on to the three shows that we're devoting most of our time to today. But I have one question for you before we move on. Because I didn't put this in the notes. But I'm interested in just like based off of what's coming on this list and what we know of what we are both sort of separately watching, quickly rank your top three streaming services right now.
Number one, HBO Max, Apple TV. I'm big Hulu gang to the riff for the end. I'm big Hulu gang to the end.
Yeah. So Netflix not even in your top.
I don't go to Netflix. I watch One Piece movie on Netflix that just came to Netflix. That was the last thing I've done.
Yeah. I was just curious. I was thinking about that and I forgot to write it down here, but I was thinking about how a lot of this content avalanche is just based on the streamers making a push for market share. Like mm-hmm. everyone wants people watching their streaming service. And I was thinking about how I think only one thing on this list is from Netflix. And I was just thinking about tops. I feel like it depends on the show that I'm watching, but I'm with you in that I feel like HBO and HBO Max comfortably out in front.
Comfortably.
For me. Like comfortably. Not only because of the library of movies that they have, but the shows that they're dropping. Half the ones on this list are from HBO Max, and some of the ones that we're about to talk about also HBO Max. And I don't even watch some of the great shows that I know are already out on the platform. So I'm in agreement with you on number one. Let's talk about Minx, which is a brand new HBO Max show starring one of our goats,
my OG.
Jake Johnson of New Girl OG. Fame. Just really Nick Miller as a character from New Girl, just all-timer. Love that show. Love the comedic energy that Jake Johnson brings. This is a 70s period piece about a porn publisher who gets into the game of publishing a feminist women's magazine, sort of using the sales pitch of male pornography. This show is really good.
Fucking great. Really enjoyed the first two episodes. Just funny. I get the point. Not heavy-handed, but still very deliberate.
Yeah, so for anyone who's interested in watching this show, HBO Max is dropping, I believe, two episodes of it a week for the next 4 or 5 weeks. So you kind of get an hour to watch every week. It is a serious show. It's interesting because the characters in the show, Jake Johnson plays the porn publisher, makes a comment that basically the feminist writings that the Joyce character wants to get out is basically medicine that needs to be served with peanut butter. It needs to be something that can the writing needs to be next to something that's going to attract viewers. And I feel like that's the show.
Yeah.
Sort of like there's really interesting and serious feminist messaging within the show. It's also just a workplace comedy. Like it's also just, I also just want to hang out with these characters, hear them banter, see their workplace. And then before you know it, you're getting like a half an hour description of the conversation that's happening between second and third wave feminism in like a comedy.
Love it. We got a nice 12 minutes of just different sizes of penises.
There's a large dong montage.
Large penis montage. Just enough for you to be like, oh, these are all different individuals. But you're having a fantastic conversation that about feminism and what it's like taken. I like the idea that we're with the main character and she's just like, yo, I am prudish to the point that I'm good, but she's so prudish she's not actually moving forward as a person. That's perfect.
Yeah, Ophelia Lovibond, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, plays the Joyce character. I think she's excellent at being likable while also probably having different sexual mores than most of the audience watching this show, just based off of the period. And again, the conversation that was happening at the time between the different waves of feminism. I don't want to be the like two dudes on a podcast to explain feminism. Like that's but I do think it's interesting. The dynamic that's happening in this show is that second wave feminism is mostly dominated by things that take place, I would say, at the workplace and professionally. It's about the role of women in society, but it's also about almost like taking back sexual power by like not expressing it, like just not giving men the time of day is basically, again, summarizing. And I'm not an expert, but that's second wave feminism. And third wave feminism is a lot of the sexual empowerment that I think we as an audience are probably more familiar with. This idea that, you know, a woman can be an artist and iconic and a whole bunch of different things in the mainstream pop culture and still be sexually liberated. That conversation was complicated. And, you know, still is, depending on who you talk to. And this show manages to fit that within this comedy.
I think a real good antithesis of the entire premise of the show is seeing Joyce interact with her sister when they were having a conversation about dildos. And the sister being just more, so much more curious, in a curious way, not to sound like reduction of words. Just she's just like, hey, can I use this? Because I don't have an opportunity to do this, because the life I live, I have to be very secretive about how I can feel great. And she's like, we don't even talk about these things, which you would think as two women, they would be able to discuss, you know, body parts, what they like, what they don't like us trying to discuss at the early part of the pod, which one of us is getting pegged, but we're not. Cause you know, that toxicness, man, it really destroys us.
I knew you were going to bring it back.
It just
to
all
that.
Connects.
Because this is a dynamic where you have a character who, by modern standards, is prudish, but is sort of being unwillingly or willingly sometimes sort of pushed into the deep end of porn publishing so that she has a way to publish her feminist magazine. And again, this is a space where her feminist writings are going to be published alongside male nudes and so forth. And so it's interesting to see that push and pull of like trying to quote unquote not sell out her ideas while also being a person still willing to like learn about the perspective of these other women, and then you as an audience viewer get to learn as well.
Yeah, but I think that's just like what we've always been really pushing for in this podcast, about just you yourself are in a bubble, and it's important to expand that bubble so you can also understand the other side of someone who is just like you, but different. So for her, Joyce, to go into this Joyce to go into the porn world and still think she can be as like good-hearted, like in the second episode where they're trying to go find a advertiser. And she was like, can't we just go to a nonprofit? It's like, no, you can't. That's not, it won't exist. But I really love what Jake Johnston is doing in this show. I feel like he seems like such a skeezy, smart guy in the show. I just want more of it. I like all the characters. I love Bambi. I love that they're like, I love that we're not seeing them as gross people. For a long time, when they would discuss any sort of porn, any sort of like sexually liberated person, they were always sort of like ditzy or they were less than. And these are just people.
Yeah, it's people in a workplace doing their best, which is not that dissimilar from any other workplace comedy. And it treats its characters with sort of grace in how they're living their lives outside of the workplace. Like we see, you know, we have preconceived notions of what the Jake Johnson character is going to be like, because you're like, oh, porn producer in the 70s. skeezy, predatory, maybe probably. Even. And then you get to know him within the show and you're like, oh, this is a guy who's just really smart in business and wants a good life for him and his family. I assume we haven't seen them on screen, but my guess would be in some form or another, wants this American dream life and has just found success in business in these things and still treats his employees with respect, regardless of their jobs and whatever. And I think that's really interesting take on this script. I think there's a different version of this show that could exist. That's like a 45 minute drama about someone trying to get their feminist writings published in like this seedy world of pornography and everything is bad. And I think that's a worse show.
Oh yeah. Like this show, we see the main characters secretly close her windows to masturbate. And that in itself is like an act of defiance against herself. Like, that's the kind of shit I want to see where it's like funny. It's played for a quick laugh, but it is nuanced enough to carry the weight of breaking down the box that is yourself, even if the box that you build around yourself is for the betterment of you and your kind. Go for it, dude. I don't care. Have fun.
Yeah, that was well said. That's about the best description I could give of the show. Again, airing on HBO Max, 2 episodes a week. We'll probably revisit it as we get through the first season. Again, it's going to go pretty quickly with them dropping 2 a week. But I think it's really worth your time if you want to check it out. Second show we wanted to talk about. Imagine this, Steve. Also on HBO what? Max. Just on a crazy what? Hot streak.
Are they paying this?
Now, this one feels like it was made for me. And I even messaged you and I was like, you can pick a different show. We'll watch it. We'll talk about it. But I need to be able to discuss this show, Winning Time, on the podcast. So Winning Time is like an hour comedy drama about the Showtime Lakers. Anyone who's not familiar with that, it's basically roughly the period between the period of the 1980s in Los Angeles. It's when the Lakers got some of their biggest stars of all time. The show is mostly centered around them drafting Magic Johnson, who is a name that you might even be familiar with if you have never watched a basketball game. They at that time in the 80s, the Lakers had Magic Johnson. They had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the all-time greats. They eventually get James Worthy. They had some amazing coaches. It's really just an iconic era of basketball. And they basically made – Adam McKay basically made a live-action comedy cartoon out of the access of L.A. And I find it fascinating. I don't know what your thoughts so far have been on the show.
It's different than you. I imagine you watched – The Last Dance and took it in as a historical thing, whereas for me I could just like take it in very coldly. I could just watch it, enjoy it for the humor. It took me a moment to realize this was Magic Johnson, even though there was like they beat it over your head that it's Magic Johnson. Like the opening scene, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. is him finding out has HIV positive or AIDS, right? And then it cut to the past. I'm like, holy fuck, this is a good shit. I do love the constant breaking in the fourth wall, them talking to the camera. I think John C. Reilly is shining in this. It's fucking great. The actor playing Magic Johnson is fun in it. He's a bit of a hoe for me, but what you gonna do? You know? Prudish Steve strikes again. But I do enjoy the show, but I don't have any of the historical context for it, so I'm just watching it. So like, anything that happens on screen, I don't know what's gonna happen. I'm just like, oh shit. Whoa.
Yeah, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about, because for me, it's sort of like watching an interpretation of something that I already know happens. I mean, my Lakers, you know, knowledge might be lacking a little bit as in comparison to like my Sixers knowledge or even my Bulls knowledge, having, you know, watched The Last Dance recently and what have you. But I still know the basics of everything that happens. So I'm interested in like how you perceive the fourth wall breaking, the sort of modern day context they're putting on this historical events, and if it actually helps explain and center the show for you. Because they're doing a lot of work outside of just the typical two characters talking in a room. There's a lot on screen.
There's happening. A lot on screen happening. I think the best way to describe what's happening on screen for me, just a person watching without any sort of historical context, is how they handle the Jerry West character. They like really give you all his backstory constantly. Like, and even like the subtleness of when he finally does win the big game. I don't even know what your games are called. When he wins the big game and he's just there still unhappy. That really mm-hmm. helps cement his character for me, because like I get what he's about, I get what he's on, I get what his struggle is, but I get his like constant need to like eat, the constant need to like, I need to be in this, this is what I need. I get it, mm-hmm. but I have no history or context for it. For me, it's just good TV. This is just good yeah. television. I'm enjoying everyone on the screen. It took me a moment, I was like, the Jerry West character especially, I was like, isn't that the dude from that face with the face? I'm like, oh yeah, that is him. Oh, he looks so different.
This cast is crazy yes. stacked. I mean, like, there are stars that are slated to appear in this show. We're 2 episodes in, and they still haven't appeared yet. And Sally Field appears in episode 2, just in, like, a part for, like, 2 minutes. I mean, this cast is nuts. And then has the first-timers or near-first-timers. Like, I think Quincy Isaiah, who's playing Magic Johnson, is absolutely... you know, doing the actor version of putting up numbers.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, I think he is insanely charming and somehow manages to capture that. I don't know. Magic almost has like an amazing uncanniness to him where you're almost like no person can be this charming and approachable. Like it doesn't seem real. And I feel like this actor is doing an incredible job of portraying that, is that he just sort of floats in and out of everyone's life. And aside from the relationship with his mother in the show, everyone basically wants to please him because he's so charming.
Oh, a little Red Rocket-esque, eh? Mm.
Yeah, but is I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about like the interior locker room of those Lakers teams. I don't think Magic is the bad guy, but I mean, I don't know.
No, he's a bad dude.
I know more than you, and I don't want to spoil it.
He's a bad dude. He's a bad dude. From the 2 episodes I've seen, the way he was dirty macking his ex-girl's new man, that was some prime time dirty macking. He was fucking that other bitch right before the church function, just like, yeah, whatever, I just need a nut.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, girl, come home. Why are you with this dude? Break up with him and let everybody in town know you broke up with him for me.
There's so many things that I want to tell you because I know where these people are currently. And I won't, because I want to see you experience it in real time and have the realizations that like I've already had from just having the knowledge of the show. But like I said, this is something that is just like made for me. I think because of the difficulty in translating sports to the screen, I think that it's been overlooked for TV shows. I mean, I know that like things like Friday Night Lights exist, and like I'm not saying that good sports shows don't exist, but at the level of access that they're doing, like where you have all of these real people that are still alive being played like to a maximum extent. I mean, like, Jerry West is still crazy. Living, and here he is, an actor portraying him cheating on his wife on TV and being really sad about his dad and like never being happy. And like that guy is still alive. So like the idea of this level of basically gossip being spilled from an era of people that are still living, still involved in basketball and still involved at the highest level, I can't really think of anything like that that's not a documentary. Obviously, The Last Dance is different because you're asking the real people. But this is an interpretation of very real things. I don't even know what I would be thinking if I was them seeing myself on screen.
It's a weird time to be alive because we're seeing a lot more sort of like biographies and biopics of people who we still have access to, which can be good,
mm-hmm.
but also sometimes the viewer as me makes me always a little bit concerned. So, but when I see stuff like this, when I see the Jerry West character just being just sucky and Magic being sort of like a charismatic asshole, I'm like, okay, I like what I'm seeing. Like seeing John C. Reilly is great when he's like talking to the camera, like, I don't have that money. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
that's fun shit. But I also, you know, shout out to the scammers. Shout out to all my scammers out there.
Yeah, it's funny because I know that there were other people. I think Will Ferrell really wanted to play the role of Jerry Buss. And two episodes in, I already can't see anyone other than John C. Reilly. He so owns this part and has a... He always does this, but John C. Reilly has a whole lot of charisma for a man who looks really awkward. Like, just seems to be able to turn it on. And for some reason, you find yourself just rooting for him in this show, even though, at least from my perspective, I know that this Lakers team is going to, like, fucking grow up and beat my Sixers in the finals. And, like, that this Lakers dynasty as a whole is just going to equal like years and years of, you know, not just LA sports, but the sports world in general, just being dominated by Lakers talk. Like, this era of basketball is eventually what would lead someone like LeBron James to go to the Lakers because of this legacy that's established. So, like, it's weird for me to be rooting for the Lakers because I don't like the Lakers. But that's the experience of watching this really well-made show.
I'm just here for more really well-made shows. I'm here. I'm sorry, guys. For 6-7 months, I made you watch every single episode of Marvel TV shows to dismay. And now I'm ready. Let's watch some TV that, you know, actually has heart to it, has a real feeling.
I think this is excellent. I think anyone who wanted to watch it could easily catch up. There's only two episodes out. I believe the new ones drop on Sundays. It's just exciting. Even if you're not a basketball fan, it is truly like a live action cartoon about people with insane amount of money and talent in Los Angeles at a really interesting time in history. Definitely check that out. And the last one that we wanted to talk about is Severance, which I know we're deeper into the season on that. I haven't fully caught up, but this is a show on Apple TV, your second favorite streaming platform, that is basically a sci-fi dystopia about work-life balance.
It's so good.
I don't really want to spoil it any more than that, but just imagine if your work life and your home life were totally separate. And you can access the other while at the one that you're at. So I'm at home now. I wouldn't know anything about work. When I'm at work, I wouldn't know anything about home. Really, just a great kernel of an idea. I feel like those are the ideas that people like wish would come to them.
It's the kind of thing that I'm watching it and I think to myself, how the hell does someone who I'm assuming has not had the same access to the lame ass life I live can come and do something like I feel absolutely seen. There are moments where I feel like all of us, regardless of how good our jobs are to us compared to our awful jobs now before, we're like, I wish I didn't have to think about anything between 9 to 5. I wish I didn't have to feel anything. I wish I didn't have to juggle. And the way the show makes me feel like I would consider it breaks my heart. And I think that's the point of a good sci-fi. I love good sci-fi where it's like, what is the technology of how we're doing this? And how would I actually exist in that technology?
Yeah, I would compare the, based off of the first episode, it really gave me a similar feeling to the show Devs, which aired on Hulu 2 years back or so. Just both of them are sort of this sci-fi mix of like the world exists in sort of like a sci-fi tech minimalism where when you look outside, maybe things don't seem that different. Like he still drives a very normal car, lives in a very normal house. We're supposed to assume that for the most part, these people live normal lives outside of work. But then when you hear them talk to each other, you have the knowledge that something is different here. The world has changed in a dystopian nature that makes it different from ours. And then especially when you see them in their giant corporate building with their long bare hallways and their sort of like searing white lights, that it's all very again, it's almost like a tech company build a hospital.
Very surgical.
Is what
very
it feels surgical. Like. And Devs has that too. And it's I like these sort of like grounded, but not that grounded sci-fi stories that feel like they take place in the real world.
Yeah, if that makes sense. I love stuff like that. And just based off the first episode, I love where it's going. I love that it feels hopeless. There's a hopelessness to it that I, the person watching, relate to, that I think mm-hmm. is the heart of a great show, is you're not supposed to make me feel what I'm feeling while I'm watching something that is ridiculous. It would never happen. Because it's really crazy how the show feels so grounded, like you're saying, but then also so Jetson-y to me. Like, in my head, this mm-hmm. is fucking sci-fi. I'm clearly watching a sci-fi show, but he's just driving a stick shift car. Like, it's wild.
I'm really excited to catch up on it. I think we'll revisit it when the whole season has been out and we've both watched it all. But I do think that this idea of work-life balance is especially something that we've had to face working from home, where it becomes more difficult to separate your daily away from work life because work is in your home. And so I obviously didn't come up with this idea, but I do feel like that could be partially the genesis of this idea of this, like, you know, in our economy, work has basically invaded people's lives. And how, to what extent would you go to keep those things separated? And because of their separateness, I assume that for the most part, this show happens on like two different timelines, the work timeline and the home timeline. And when those crash into each other, what happens? Which is on a micro scale, what happens to us every single day? What happens when you're trying to eat dinner and you get a Slack?
Oh, don't
work?
You hate that?
Don't you wish you could just shut that off and it would never happen? I just feel like this show exists at a very, I think, important point in our current market, if you will.
I just hope it ends much more optimistically. I hope that's what I hope. I hope just off episode one that we end in a place where there's hope somewhere to have like the true work-life balance, which I don't think anyone ever really feels like they absolutely grab. I get Slack messages sometime when I'm just trying to like cook dinner. And now you find that to be so fucking invasive. But it's like, what am I going to do? You know, I'm secretly sneaking away to make dinner because I'm in my home.
Yeah, 100%. There's no way around that. And to a certain extent, work-life balance is just sort of like corporate buzzwords in itself. In the same way that, like, you know, in the first episode, our Adam Scott character has like a big binder of rules for the workplace. And it's just like corporate flowcharts of what you're supposed to say, which everyone, I think, at some point has been in a workplace that felt like it was dictated not by, you know, humans, but just by, you know, weird sets of rules and, you know, buzzwords and whatever. great show so far. I'm interested though, like, I think this has been renewed for a second season already. Could be wrong about that. Don't quote me. But I feel like it's interesting is that, like, because of the nature of the separation between work and life and the reset that we see characters undergo, I feel like this show has the potential to be long running because you could hypothetically do this with different groups of characters.
I'm much further than you are in this show, so I'm doing my best to just remain episode one based.
Okay, I won't,
but like I do, as watching it from where I'm at, I do feel like we could do the same show with more people, or we could do the same show a second season with the same people. That's all I'll say.
I look forward to revisiting it with you. Again, this airs on Apple TV Plus, so if you've got that, check out Severance. So those are our three shows that we're recommending, and again, we'll probably be revisiting at some point, Minx, Winning Time, and Severance, and we've got a whole lot of other TV coming out this month. So anything else that you want to leave the people with? I've got a couple movie related things I just want to mention offhand, but anything else that you want to mention?
I see one of your movie related things, and I want to talk about it really fast with you.
I'm assuming that this is
Deepwater. It's fresh.
So for
I don't want to talk about Deepwater.
Oh, I haven't watched Fresh yet. Man. So we're sort of like on opposite ends of this. So we're referring to Hulu has been dropping some. We were obviously talking about all of the streaming TV shows, but there's been a decent amount of streaming movies that have come out lately. So I noted two here: Deepwater, which I've watched and wouldn't really recommend, and Fresh, which I want to see. But you've watched.
Yeah, I watched Fresh. Fresh stars Sebastian Stan without his Bucky Barnes wig. He's a hideous. He doesn't have his Bucky Barnes wig or a beard. So he looks like a predator just off that. And I want any women out there to watch this movie. It's a fun movie. I think it's one of those more of like, it feels more horror in the way I like a horror movie, where it's more like practical and sort of just like grounded fear. And it expands, mm-hmm. and it pretty much is like cannibalistic. People eat people, people kidnap people, but it does at the heart of it has a real strong feminist message that doesn't really come through until the very end of the film when something happens. Not to spoil it for you, but it's a fun time. It has a real some good gross out moments, some real practical food stuff that you'd be like, oh, I don't like that.
I would just recommend people check out what's been streaming recently. We'll maybe revisit these. Deepwater is an erotic thriller that I watched, and it's
you said erotic thriller too, gross.
Ew! Really spin that rot really in there.
Spitting the rot.
You know, I've been saying for a long time I want more movies for adults. Maybe I have to take this back, take that statement back. If more of them kind of suck. But maybe we'll revisit that when we both watch the movies. But just more things to check out on streaming. Also, next week on Sunday, which is also my birthday, shout out me and my mom giving birth. The Oscars are on Sunday. I will be at an Oscars party because that's just I like the Oscars. My local theater's throwing a party. I'm going to be there on my birthday. I don't know what that says about me. But looking forward to talking about the Oscars with you at some point once they air. I know you've been watching, you've been catching up on some of the nominees. I plan to do the same this upcoming week. So looking forward to talking a little Oscars next time.
The movie is Drive My Car, Suck My Dick. If any of you out there have not, you want to feel true, unending, unnerving sadness, bro. You want to know what it feels like to just sit in a car? Did you finish the movie yet? I want to know what it feels like to sit in the car and a dude tell you something about your partner and you're like, you have to listen to that shit, bro. You want it, like, dude's like, yo, yeah, I know you lived with her, but I knew her. Jesus.
You can watch this on HBO Max too. I know that they're not sponsoring us, but there's a whole lot of Oscar nominees that got dropped on HBO Max. I saw you watched West Side Story too, man, I think.
Can I have a second about West Side Story? Thank you. Welcome to Steven's podcast where he's watching Oscar nominees just to say he watched them this year. I will say this about West Side Story. Ansel Elgort is a boring face bitch on screen. Regardless of the terrible things that he did, that he deserves to be shunned for, you should not watch his things. Baby Driver still is awesome, and he was better when he was younger and his face was still pudgy. He has matured into this weird, sort of like douche looking bro face, and I just like, Also, I had gone into watching The West Side Story with no premise of this movie at all in my mind. I've never watched the past. I've never seen anything. I had no idea it was just Romeo and Juliet.
You were just like, wait a second. This feels familiar. This feels 500 years old.
Are y'all
familiar?
The Capulets? Somebody in here is a Capulet. It's that, and it's just good.
We're going to talk more about this when the Oscars are over. I hope you enjoyed our review of recent TV. We look forward to talking about more of these shows with you all in the future. Thanks for listening to Post Weird.